This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Life sustains itself by cell division. So does cancer. Breast cancer cells multiply faster because of CDK4/6 proteins. But what if we could block those proteins and stop runaway cell division? To that end, Dana-Farber scientists laid the foundation for CDK4/6 inhibitors, new drugs that are increasing the survival rate for many advanced breast cancers. Dana-Farber's momentum of discovery keeps finding new ways to outmaneuver cancer. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
A housing burst.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. There haven't been many signals that the housing market is about to turn around. But this morning, there's at least some reason to think it could. Possibly, maybe. Applications for mortgages are at a five-year high, thanks to interest rates we haven't seen in decades. Of course, applications aren't the same thing as loans. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer has more.
The Mortgage Bankers Association says mortgage applications for the week that ended December 19th were up 48%. Mortgage rates are being driven down by the Fed. It's plowing money into Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae. Ginnie handles certain government-backed loans. That cash infusion allows for more new mortgages or refinancing. Guy Sakala publishes Inside Mortgage Finance. He says don't get too excited. We're still in a credit crunch.
There are a lot of people who are making applications now who don't know that they're not going to qualify. They're going to find out that they have no equity in their house and no one wants to make them a loan.
And Sakala says the low rates may not help stave off foreclosures. Homeowners being foreclosed upon need completely new loans, not just a refinancing at a lower rate. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
There are some other numbers out this morning, none of them very pleasant. Consumer spending, down. Personal incomes, down. Durable goods orders, yeah. Of course, Wall Street has heard it all by now, and so stocks are up a bit. The Dow has gained 38 points to 8,458. The NASDAQ is flat, and the S&P 500 is up 1 point. Stocks finish mostly lower in Asia, and the markets are a fraction lower in Europe. The stock market on Wall Street does close at 1 Eastern today. Most prices are falling in this economy, except this one, the price of cocoa. We're joined by our correspondent in London, Stephen Beard. Stephen, how expensive is it now?
It's at its highest in London for 23 years. My favorite quote of the morning, cocoa is on fire, says one analyst. There hasn't been this much excitement in the London cocoa market, Scott, for quite a few years since somebody actually tried to corner the cocoa market a few years ago, somebody who was inevitably dubbed Chock Finger by the press. So it's looking very buoyant, not to say frothy here in London.
Okay, so why is it going up?
Part of it is to do with the fact that there's a huge market in London and cocoa is priced unusually here in London, not in US dollars, but in British pounds, and the British pound is weak. But beyond that, the bigger story is supply and demand. Supplies are pretty tight. Cocoa production in Africa has been falling. Heavy rainfall, apparently, in West Africa has cut output. There's been an increased incidence of the dreaded black pod disease. And, of course, there's been concern, too, about political unrest and upheaval in West Africa, which has raised fears about future supply.
And what about the demand for cocoa?
Well, this is interesting, too. Demand is holding up, unlike many other commodities in a downturn. And it comes down to this whole point about comfort food. People need their steaming hot mug of cocoa at bedtime, or they need their chocolate bars to keep their spirits up throughout the misery of the recession.
All right. Stephen Beard in London. Thank you.
Okay, Scott.
Some people buy chocolate, other people buy guitars at auction. Somebody just paid $100,000 for one of Kurt Cobain's guitars. It's a classic Fender Mustang with a sunburst finish. I should also mention that Cobain smashed it on stage, so it's held together by duct tape. This is the Morning Report for Wednesday, December 24th on Marketplace.org. We're hearing that the FDIC could announce a deal today for IndyMac Bank. IndyMac was seized in July, and the government's been looking for a buyer ever since. We've also learned that before IndyMac's collapse, a federal regulator allowed the bank to cook its books so it would look healthier than it actually was. Apparently, as our reporter Steve Henn found out, IndyMac might not have been the only bank doing this.
In a conference call with IndyMac's CEO this May, Daryl Doko, a high-ranking federal regulator, agreed to allow IndyMac to backdate $18 million in capital contributions, recording the cash as an asset on its books 6 weeks before it was actually received.
I think it's very troubling from an ethical perspective.
John Coffey's a law professor at Columbia University.
It's not really clear whose side the regulator is on.
Regulators at the Office of Thrift Supervision, or OTS, where Doko was a regional director, allowed other banks to do the same thing, according to Treasury Department's Inspector General, Eric Thorson. Doko was also the regulator in charge of overseeing Washington Mutual and Countrywide.
Well, we don't know yet whether they also engaged in the same behavior, but if it were to turn out that the same kind of backdating occurred at all three of these institutions, I think that will be a real stain.
Officials at OTS said they were unaware of the backdating until the Inspector General's report and said Doko has been temporarily removed from his job. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
OPEC would love to drive the price of oil back up. It is a cartel, after all, but the economy has decimated the demand for oil everywhere. This morning, a barrel is going for about $36. That's 2003 prices. So the question we're asking is, can a dollar a gallon gas be far behind? Here's our senior business correspondent, Bob Moon.
When you finish pumping your gas and tear off the receipt, you're essentially getting a personal report on all the oil that's backing up in storage tanks in Oklahoma. That's where the benchmark price of crude is set. OPEC can talk about cutting output all at once, but oil analyst and trader Stephen Shork says as long as we're burning less fuel, there's really nothing the oil cartel can do about it.
This is not a supply issue. OPEC only controls one side of the equation, supply. OPEC just has to sit and twiddle its thumbs and wait for the consuming countries to come out of the recession.
He says prices keep falling in spite of the cartel's vow to make further cuts because traders don't believe it.
They're not even abiding by their old quotas, let alone their newly announced quotas. And this is the game the market is playing now with OPEC. It's a massive game of financial chicken.
Or put another way, at the moment, oil traders are convinced the deteriorating economy has OPEC over a barrel. Shork says if things don't improve, crude could even drop as low as $20 as early as summer. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
New York is already the most expensive place to live in the U.S., and there's a good chance the price of getting around the city will be going up. The Transit Authority has a $1.2 billion shortfall that has to be repaired by January 1st. Here's Jeremy Hobson.
This is a Manhattan-bound 6 train.
In New York City, the MTA is life. $2 will get you almost anywhere in the metropolitan area. 81 will get you a month's worth of unlimited travel. Well, at least for the moment, says MTA spokesman Jeremy Soffin.
You know, we don't have the ability to print money. You know, there are only two things that we can do. We can cut or we can raise fares and tolls.
The plan is to do both. If the cash-strapped state doesn't bail out the MTA, subway fares could rise to $3 a pop by summer, $105 for a monthly pass. Soffin expects some people will abandon public transit altogether.
There will be some drop-off.
But at Grand Central Station, the reaction is a bit more stoic.
No other option?
Most definitely not. I would not cut back on my transit, no way. It's a good deal anyway.
Of course, more passengers doesn't necessarily spell more revenue for the MTA, which actually loses money on every ride. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Germany is famous for its Christmas markets. It's a tradition that dates back to the Middle Ages. And even in these economic times, it's still going strong. From Cologne, Emily Schwing reports.
Cologne's Gothic Cathedral looms over one of the most popular Christmas markets in Germany. Small wooden stalls decked with festive lights surround a giant Christmas tree. The square is filled with people eyeing handmade wooden toys and sampling the Glühwein, a traditional spiced wine. Marion Lesbue from France munches potato pancakes and licks grease from her fingers.
We won't change our Christmas plans a lot. We'll buy little things, a lot of little things. So we'll still have fun, but with little things that don't cost too much.
Lesbue's holding on to her money this year, as is Eileen McGee. She made the weekend trip from London, but there's not much left over for Christmas gifts. So she's giving jars of authentic German mustard and handmade pottery.
You try to make it a more quality gift, and that's why the handmade things are they're special, and it means more than maybe the quantity of what you're buying somebody.
People also come to the Christmas markets for the atmosphere, and even a financial crisis can't change that. Randolph Sherman is the organizer for the Cologne Cathedral Market.
Perhaps they don't buy a car, but to buy a Glühwein or to eat a Bratwurst or to buy small gifts, the people need it every year and they want it. And for that, they will have enough money.
People like Ron Tabak. He made the two-hour drive from the Netherlands for the weekend. Tabak says he is worried about his pension and increasing mortgage payments, but not today.
For me, there's maybe a problem because I'm retired. And maybe the inflation... My pension is not going with going up with the inflation. So that's maybe a problem. But so far, here in Cologne, it's perfect. And we are enjoying ourselves. And maybe sometimes we think about the crisis, but not today.
From the Christmas markets in Cologne, I'm Emily Schwing for Marketplace.
Taxpayers expect some changes in the business world after all this economic fallout. But company executives may have different ideas. Commentator Robert Reich sees a giant conflict of interest brewing.
The public believes the bailouts of Wall Street and the Big Three will permanently change these industries. But I doubt that's what industry insiders want. Goldman Sachs CEO Lloyd Blankfein, for example, said recently the firm's business strategy doesn't need to change. What? Goldman got $10 billion of taxpayer money precisely because it and other big banks were so over-leveraged they threatened the whole financial system. I can understand why Blankfein doesn't want to change. He took home $54 million last year. But the public expects real reform for its $10 billion at Goldman and tens of billions more in other banks. The Big Three have agreed to become far more fuel efficient as a condition for their bailout, but they promised this before, during the oil crisis of the 1970s. They never delivered then because their biggest profits were in gas guzzlers that consumers wanted to buy as soon as the first oil crisis was over. Will history repeat itself? Now that gas prices are half what they were 6 months ago, consumers who can afford it are suddenly less interested in fuel efficiency. They're buying fewer hybrids and showing renewed interest in SUVs. So why should we think Detroit will revolutionize itself? Now, I'm not so cynical as to accuse anyone of bad faith. It's just that both Wall Street and Detroit earned big bucks from their old strategies before the bottom fell out of the economy. So it's natural to think they'd view the bailouts as ways to hold on until the economy rebounds. They see their problem as cyclical, not structural. But the bailouts have been sold to the public as means toward fundamental change in finance and autos. This means if the bailouts are to do what they're supposed to do, stop Wall Street from wild risk-taking with piles of borrowed money, and push the auto industry into making fundamentally new products, Washington will not only have to set strict standards, but watch over these industries even when the recession is over.
Robert Reich teaches public policy at the University of California, Berkeley. His most recent book is Supercapitalism. Share your opinion with us at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for tuning in. And from all of us at Marketplace, happy holidays.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.